With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
News Radio 840 WHAS welcomes you to Jim Strader Outdoors, the area's leading authority on hunting and fishing. Jim Strader Outdoors is brought to you by Mossy Oak Properties Hart Realty. For the outdoor home of your dreams, call Paul Thomas at 270-524-1980. Linden Animal Clinic, your pet's best friend. Sportsman's Taxidermy. Visit them at sportsmanstaxidermy.com. A.N. Roth Heating and Cooling, a family-owned business with over 100 years' experience in the Louisville area. Wildlife Habitat Solutions. Check Jim and his team on Facebook at Wildlife Habitat Solutions and SMI Marine. Getting your boat back on the water in no time. To join in on the conversation, call us at 571-8484 inside Louisville and 1-800-444-8484 outside the metro. Now, sit back and relax and enjoy the next 2 hours of Jim Strader Outdoors on News Radio 840 WHAS.
Came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the Western skies. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Everybody, Jim Strader here. Welcome to Jim Strader Outdoors on this fine June evening. We've got a very informational type of format tonight in that there's been just all kinds of developments recently concerning the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife Resources. The Attorney General has ruled that the Fish and Wildlife Commission has been in violation of the law regarding the Open Meetings Act, where they have held not one, not two, but three illegal meetings in regard to Commissioner Storm's new contract. We'll be detailing that. They have also been found in violation of the Open Records Act, which is where the public can go to try to find out what's been happening within the department. And in that regard, I've got a couple of individuals on the program with me tonight who actually put in these open records requests, and they are concerned sportsmen. My hat's off to them for what they've done, because they've stepped up for the common man, as I like to say. By that, I mean you, the outdoorsmen and outdoor women of the state. And this, unfortunately, proves without a doubt that we've been lied to, that we've been kept in the dark, and that we've been fed the byproduct of cattle farming, if you get my drift. This needs to stop, and we're going to show tonight how they have conspired, and that's the right word. Is this a conspiracy theory? No, it's not a theory. They conspired to hide things from us, and thank goodness the Attorney General ruled in our favor to allow us to get the information that we're going to trot out tonight. In that regard, I've got these two guests, and I'll trot them out here after the break, but stay tuned because we got a lot of information to go over tonight, and I think you're going to have your eyes opened in a way that you probably wish you hadn't, but it's no surprise to Jimbo. So stay with us. We'll be back right after the break. The break is presented by SMI Marine. Remember, you never get soaked by my friends at SMI. Welcome back to Jim Strader Outdoors. Again, tonight, folks, we're covering some violations of the law where the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife Resources commissioners broke the Open Meetings Act law. And we're also going to talk about some open records requests that were denied and tried to cover up. And the individuals that have got on the program with me tonight filed these open records requests, and they did so because they're passionate about wildlife and had some concerns. Let me go back to the genesis for this and how this all started. Most of you who listen to the program recall that I did a show about concerns that the people in Eastern Kentucky had about the deer herd. They were concerned about the effects of hemorrhagic disease, how to rim wreck the herd over there. And subsequent to that, I've done several reports from statewide calls and input that I've had about our turkey populations. So what we attempted to do was to obviously just ask the right questions. You know, that's what you're supposed to do. When you see a problem, you need to address it. And that's what we did. But we ran into loggerheads when we attempted to do these things because the department was not willing to share information. They were not willing to be, as they like to say, transparent. And I think the open records request and what they revealed proves beyond any shadow of a doubt that they've been trying to hide information from us and that we've been lied to, quite frankly. So in that regard, I'm going to introduce my guest. First one is Jimmy Cantrell. Jimmy's the individual who was on the first broadcast with me that raised these questions. And Jimmy is president of the Appalachian Outdoorsman Association. It's one of the largest sportsman's organizations in the state. And Jimmy is a very unique individual in that he actually handled open records requests for the Justice Department. That was part of his job, so he's no stranger to that issue. Jimmy, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can, Jim.
Tell folks what your previous involvement has been with these open records requests, why this has been so frustrating for us on behalf of the sportsmen.
Well, it started off, Jim, with, like you mentioned, the sportsmen having concerns about the deer population here in eastern Kentucky. The membership and other people that wasn't even members of Appalachian Outdoorsman, they brought it to us at one of our meetings back last year, or back earlier this year, and after the last couple seasons. And we just basically, you know, started gathering information. We put on our Facebook page a little post just asking people if they had any concerns about the deer population in eastern Kentucky. And just started reaching out and gathering information. And then once we gathered some information and seen that it was a really hot topic among the sportsmen and sportswomen, then we reach out to our Eastern Kentucky Commission members by form of email, asking them to work with us on this, that there was concerns among the sportsmen, and we was asking them to work with us. That email went out.
Who were those commissioners, Jimmy?
Those commissioners, I actually have the email in front of me right now. It was Commissioner Kleiner, Commissioner Horn, and Commissioner Morgan for the 7th, 8th, and 9th districts. And that email, I can read it real quickly. It's a brief email. It states, Appalachian Outdoorsman Association has received concerns from numerous sportsmen in eastern Kentucky regarding the deer population. It is the belief of the sportsmen that several contributing factors has led to the current situation and the declining population. We are asking that the current situation be addressed and considered an urgent matter. We are willing to discuss the matter and work together toward a solution. And that's
and subsequent to that, none of that happened. It's like you guys don't know what you're talking about. There's no problem. You remember you and Mark Nedley were on the program with me, and we used the department's own numbers to show the decline.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get into, you know, some of those aspects, but basically it was like you guys don't know what you're talking about.
Yes, it was almost as if the commission and the department went into defensive mode on that immediately. And at no time with us asking as stakeholders for them to work with us to see what the issue was and try to resolve the issue and us work together, at no point did they ever contact us and want to work with us or discuss the issue. They went independently, separate from us, and just started reporting there wasn't that much of a problem and so forth and so on, like we discussed on your previous show.
All right. I've also got Brian Mackey here, and Brian is a lifelong hunter and fisherman. He is a farmer, and he manages for wildlife on his farms. Most importantly, is real passionate about this in that he has been involved actually doing consulting work for the Department of Fish and Wildlife in the past, where they've done numerous wildlife projects. So he knows how that's supposed to work. He also has been involved with the private lands wildlife biologist in developing habitat on his farm. Brian, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jim.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're so passionate about this.
Well, I grew up hunting and fishing and grew up on a farm, so I was blessed to have those opportunities. But we also traveled and used public land and public resources, you know, even though we still had our own properties. I followed the inner workings of the department for, fairly in-depth for probably the last 20 years as far as the commission and state government and how those sometimes co-mingle and step on top of each other. But, I really started getting passionate, I guess, to the umpteenth level back in about 2018 and really, really staying on top of this stuff. And when you all ran your show back in February, bringing up these issues that some sportsmen had in Eastern Kentucky, that kind of caused me to jump in with both feet, I guess, so to say.
Well, and again, hats off to you fellas for your open records requests and what they have revealed. And we'll get into those in detail here in a minute. But, guys, bottom line, you all made open records requests that were very reasonable. You sent them to the department. And, unfortunately, the department refused to answer them. I'll let you all each, in a nutshell here, we got about 8 minutes left, talk about what you asked them to reveal to you and subsequently were refused. And in that regard, it's important, folks, that you understand they refused and violated the law in doing so. Brian, I'll lead off with you.
The first one that I submitted, they actually responded to. It took several back and forth with the record custodian. Initially, I was told I could get the information from the website, but having been familiar with the website, I knew you couldn't do that. I specifically asked in the first ORR for the harvest data for Zone 3 and 4 counties for the last 5 years. What I was wanting to do was look at a very specific, you know, method of take, sex of the deer, you know, when it was harvested. It should have entailed probably about, I'm thinking about 50 counties probably. When they sent me the documents, I received over 15,000 pages of documents. Instead of just sending me the data for zone 3 and 4, they sent me the data for zones 1, 2, 3, and 4. So I got the statewide harvest for 5 years. When specifically, the only thing I'd requested was the zone threes and fours.
What was the one that they did not want to give you?
I got a little bit of a runaround on one. They kept putting me off. It was looking for some communication that was actually in relation to your February show on these numbers. My gut told me that there may possibly be some collusion, I guess the best way to put it, because it seemed to me like the department went into immediate damage control after that show. I thought Jimmy Cantrell and, Appalachian Outdoors brought up some really valid points, because these were from the boots on the ground people. So when I submitted that second ORR that was looking for any communication, it was specifically related to the white paper and some discussions they had done with some social media journalists, so to speak. They kept putting me off and putting me off, and they didn't fulfill the guidelines of the law on that one, which subsequently led me to file an appeal with the Attorney General's office. And the Attorney General in that instance ruled that they violated the open records law.
All right, Jimmy, in your case?
In my case, Jim, back to what we was talking about a moment ago with the email asking for their to work with them for a solution to this problem, and they didn't provide it. And like I said, they had been saying that there wasn't that much of a problem. The deer was rebounding. Even at one point, we even heard it said that the deer had retch almost the level they was pre-EHD, which we knew was not true. I filed an open records request. That open records request was to verify what they were saying and how they were saying they was gathering data to justify those numbers. So we wanted to see that data to see if they was right, we was wrong, what the problem was here. The first open records request, it took a little while, but we did get it. And the numbers just didn't look right. So, for instance, there was one of the counties that has a WMA in it that they had done.
A WMA, for folks who are not familiar, is Wildlife Management Area. Go ahead.
Yes. And this was in a county that their harvest rate had dropped by 34%, and they were saying that there was 116.7 deer per square mile there.
Which is unbelievable. I mean, if you got that many animals, it's like goats in somebody's yard.
Yes. And we don't have zone one areas that's like that. So we knew there was something wrong, so we followed up with a second open records request, wanting to know how they gathered that data and a few other things. We threw in a few other things we wanted to know and gather information from. That one, they did not comply by the open records law on that one and provide us the documentation in a timely manner. So we filed an appeal to the Attorney General. The Attorney General ruled that there was twice within that request that they had violated the open records law. It took nearly 2 months to get those documents.
So much for their repeated statements that they're all about transparency. I mean, that's a joke.
Let me add something there to kind of piggyback on that, because I'm sure some people aren't familiar, but normally under an open records request, the agency has 3 business days to issue a response or send the records. But during the pandemic, that law was amended to 10 calendar days. So, under law, the department would have 10 days to either issue a response or release documents. And, that's where I myself was kind of getting stonewalled, because they weren't following within that parameter. And, in some cases, we're needing, 30, 40 days to issue documents.
Yeah, that was the same here.
Well, and that frustration, during that frustrating time, I had been in touch with you gentlemen, because I knew you had filed for these, and they were, again, questions that any concerned sportsman should be asking. And the fact you were getting stonewalled, it was unacceptable. Not only was it unacceptable, but to the point, it was against the law. And the Attorney General ruled in our favor, and we'll reveal what these documents showed as we go forward. We got to go to break here. This break is presented by Mossy Oak Properties Hart Realty. Check them out, MOPHART Realty.com. Welcome back to Jim Strader Outdoors. And again, we're talking about some recent developments with the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife Resources, where the commissioners broke the Open Meetings Act, and they did so revolving around Commissioner Storm's new contract, which is another issue that we're going to discuss tonight. And I guess, really, guys, we might as well just roll that one out here, because it was the primary reason that you folks asked the Attorney General about his opinion about this. And when I say you folks, actually Larry Richards, concerned sportsman, reached out to the Attorney General and said, look, you know, how can they negotiate this without the sportsman's knowledge? And what was revealed after that Attorney General's opinion came out, where, yes, we did have a right to know what happened there, there were several things revealed that I think the sportsmen need to know about. Guys, there's a number of things here. Number one, this was a four-year contract. Previous commissioners have only had two-year contracts. Now, that's not outside the law. The law provides for them to do that. However, in the past, that has not happened, number one. Number two, and this is the one that I find really egregious on the sportsman's part, they provided in that contract for Commissioner Storm's federal taxes to be paid. Now, sportsmen and outdoor women, I'm going to ask you a question here. Since when should we be expected to pay someone's taxes? I mean, and then furthermore, the way they structured that contract going forward, there's huge incremental monetary additions, if you will, where Commissioner Storm at the end of this term is going to be making more money, or as much money as any commissioner we've ever had, under a four-year contract. I keep going back to that, but it's important to realize that these things should be done on a two-year basis as in the past, because it's upon performance. Guys, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'll jump in here, Jim, because, like I said, I've been following a lot of this stuff, and back in the winter during the legislative session, there was a new bill introduced. Of course, the commission had filed suit with the cabinet and tourism and finance over the contract dispute with Mr. Storm last August. In January 4th of this year, House Bill 394 was introduced. That basically was a new law that was arguing the same thing that the commission's lawsuit was stating. So basically, they've got a lawsuit going on. And then they introduce legislation through legislators to do this. And the thing that was kind of troublesome to me about this, and, you know, I've been called certain people's fanboys and whatnot, but to me, it was just the principle of this whole issue. One of the co-sponsors of House Bill 394 is Matthew Koch. He's actually an individual that Mr. Storm campaigned for last fall while he was out of the job as commissioner. In February, this bill went before committee for the first reading, and the other sponsor of the bill, Mr. Massey, you know, he stated that this was not about any one individual. I kind of saw the writing on the wall, my own opinion with that. But on March 2nd, there was an emergency amendment added to House Bill 394 that basically, as soon as that was signed into law, it would be retroactive and enforceable. On the 3rd of March, I sent all the commissioners an email. And that email said, "Gentlemen, as a farmer, an avid hunter, fisherman, conservationist, and stakeholder, I fight for what is right. I've utilized many resources of the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife Resources. And as such, I am an advocate for the department and resources afforded by said department. Given the past history and unfortunately the controversies of the department, I have great concerns about House Bill 394. When I saw the emergency declaration amendment to 394 yesterday, my concerns elevated. I hope that my concerns with the amendment are unwarranted, but I cannot help but think this could easily be an end around on the current lawsuit. Representative Massey stated last Thursday that this bill wasn't about any one individual, and I hope he was truthful. If House Bill 394 passes and becomes law, I hope that the intent is not to place the former commissioner back into his previous role as the head of the department. My hope would be that the position is posted, a search is done to find the next rock star to lead the department move forward, not backwards. Myself and many will remember this as all a ploy, an attempt to put one of your own back in that was corrupted from the start. Respectfully, Brian Mackey." I didn't receive any responses back on that. And as we know, as soon as House Bill 394 was signed into law, the new contract negotiations pretty much started immediately.
And here's the important part of that. The commission did all this. They had four meetings where they violated the Open Meetings Act by doing these contract negotiations, if you will, without the sportsman's ability to see what was going on. And it's not mine or Brian Mackey or Jimmy Cantrell's supposition that shouldn't be done that way. The Attorney General ruled that they did not obey the law by going behind closed doors and offering that type of contract. When you got a contract, folks, let's look at this objectively. You got a contract where you get a, what is it, guys, 5% per year raise?
The story that the commission put out, and they did it in press releases with the Lexington Herald and Channel 36 in Lexington both, they kept stating that it was the same contract as the previous one, that it was a $140,000 contract. Originally in the negotiations, they were going to give a 5% pay raise after the second year, but Commissioner Knott made a motion to change that to a 5% raise after the first year. So based on what was being put out to the media, they were saying that Mr. Storm's contract was $140,000 a year for the first year. The second year with the 5% pay raise, it would go to $147,000. Now, he was also entitled to an $8,400 a year stipend for health insurance. But once this contract was approved, once again, I emailed the chairman of the commission, Dr. Carl Kleinert, to see if it was the same contract or if any new perks had been built into the contract. And once again, I received no response. So I filed an ORR for a copy of the contract.
An ORR, for folks at home, is an open records request.
Correct. And I was actually kind of surprised because I got that request fulfilled a whole lot faster than any of my other ones, which it was a pretty simple ask. But when I got the contract, it didn't fit the narrative that was coming, you know, from the commission or that the department had passed along to media outlets. The actual contract for Mr. Storm, if you followed the narrative that was put out by the department, you know, $140,000 a year with a 5% pay raise after the first year, and then $8,400 a year for health insurance, that would put the four-year contract at $614,600. the current contract that he has is a 4-year contract that's worth $657,477.97. The first year's pay for the first full year is not $140,000. It's $150,710.16. Because basically what they did was they put the .0765 FICA contribution in on top of the $140,000 base pay.
Which is where I believe the sportsmen are getting gigged, if you will, or screwed over, if you will, by having to pay his taxes. Well, I've never heard of such.
That bothered me, but the thing that really rubbed me on it wrong was the fact that Mr. Brammer at the Herald Leader and Steve Rogers at Channel 36, they were being told it was a $140,000 first year contract and then $147,000 after the pay raise and, the insurance stipend. So, there's almost a $43,000 discrepancy in what people were told the contract was and what the actual contract is.
And here's the interesting scenario there, so the folks at home can understand this. This was all done behind closed doors in secret, which was in violation of the law, for Lord's sake. Jimmy?
Yes, sir.
Your comments.
Well, it's back to what Brian was saying. Brian pretty much covered all of it, but, whenever you enter into executive sessions, which is what they went into. They didn't enter properly, and whenever they exited executive session, they didn't do it properly. And that's what the Attorney General ruled on. Generally, in most cases, whenever that happens, anything that happened during that would be considered null and void because it wasn't a legal meeting.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because Jack Brammer did an article under the auspices of the Herald Leader in Lexington, and Amy Bensonhaver, who is a former deputy attorney general, I'm going to read directly her quotes because she's a retired state assistant attorney general who specialized in the Kentucky Open Records and Meeting Laws for 25 years. She's also currently co-founder of the Kentucky Open Government Coalition. Bensonhaver said there is no such thing as a technical violation of open meetings law, and she's not sure the commission can simply try to do a do-over. And she quoted a court case, Carter versus Smith, a public agency cannot ratify actions improperly taken in closed session. In other words, there may be problems here about the contract because it was done in an illegal meeting. That's my statement. When conversations and actions regarding the public business should not have occurred in private in the first place, an agency cannot render those actions valid by simply taking a vote in open session without any discussion of the matter. And here's the key to what her argument is. Clearly, the rationale behind this reasoning is that any ability to ratify actions done improperly renders the Open Meetings Act meaningless. Ratification cannot be allowed to legitimize unauthorized conduct in an improperly closed session. In other words, in essence, folks, what they did, they tried to do it in secret. It was against the law to do it in secret, and now we've got to determine whether or not that's going to stand. And here's something I want to interject here, Jimmy, because you and I were there when this went down. I have repeatedly told the commissioners on numerous occasions, guys, you can't go behind closed doors and do this stuff without the public's ability to see what you're doing. You keep saying you're transparent, but then you turn around and you illegally meet and do things that won't stand the test of the law. And where are we today? The Attorney General ruled They broke the law. So it's a very, very bad precedent. I'm disappointed in the commissioners. And again, this goes much deeper and further than that. We'll cover that after we go this break. The break is presented by SMI Marine, 11400 Westport Road. Go see them. They'll take great care of you. Remember, you never get soaked by my friends at SMI. And we're back on Jim Strader Outdoors. Again, I've got Brian Mackey, a longtime wildlife management expert who happens to be a farmer who's done contract work for the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife Resources in the past, and Jimmy Cantrell, president of the Appalachian Outdoorsman Association, and who is a former custodian of records individual for the Justice Department, and what they have been able to obtain from the department, but only under the duress of their violation of the open records situation. Guys, in a nutshell here, before we go to news break, this is a very egregious situation because they're continually breaking the law. You guys remember back when they did the audit and Harmon did his audit of the department. He said there's a culture of corruption in the department and it needs to change. I think this clearly illustrates not only has there not been a change, but there's been a continuum of the type of behavior that is unacceptable for the sportsman's sake.
I totally, totally agree. And, you know, that's kind of what, you know, I've said before, my gut kind of led me to start looking into some of this and reaching out to the department. And, you know, one of the things that kind of troubled me, and we've heard it a bunch here lately, you know, transparency, transparency, transparency.
It's a lie. I'm going to say it loud and clear. You know, it is a lie.
When I filed my second ORR, I actually got a phone call, and it was about a 7-8 minute phone call, and it was from the custodian of records for the department, and he pretty much told me that, you know, he had spoke with Deputy Commissioner Clark, and that if I felt the need to do any more ORRs, that I should just contact department staff and ask my questions. You know, but to please call, because text messages or emails could be misconstrued.
Really, what that means is they don't want a paper trail.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking, Jim.
Well, I'm telling it like it is.
And then they told me, you know, that if I did feel the need to file any future ORRs, please give them a heads up before I did it.
Jimmy?
And I also wanted to interject something there, Jim.
We got a minute. Go ahead.
I also received one of those phone calls and was told the same thing whenever I filed my second open records request.
So we want to hear from you, but we really don't want to pay attention to what you're saying. Oh, by the way, we don't want any paper trail to show that we did not tell you what you asked for.
Yeah,
that's a great place. I'm just telling you. All right, folks, we got to go to break. This break is presented by Mossy Oak Properties, Art Realty. Stick with us. We got a lot more revelations for you that are probably going to really upset you the way it has us folks. All right, we'll be back right after the break.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.